This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. Might be a little too on the nose to play Fortunate Son, Chris, when you know we're getting ready to talk about Afghanistan. All right. Here's how I'm going to handle this. This hour, we're going to discuss the spending stuff. I'll probably get to some calls in a little bit. We're going to talk about this, how the Overton window has shifted so much in negative ways and how we fight back against that, remote work. We're going to get to all that stuff. But right now, we're going to focus on this hearing from today. It was a hearing about the Afghanistan pullout. And I know you're probably going to be shocked to hear this about me, but I'm going to try. I can't even believe I'm going to say these words. I don't think I've ever said these words before. I'm going to try to be sensitive today with my comments. Let me explain. I'll be able to do it, Chris. Allow me to explain. When it comes to Iraq and Afghanistan, I have so many friends who fought in one or both of those two wars. Normally it's one. Most guys didn't do both, but it's one or two of those. It's known as the Global War on Terror. You know that. GWAT. You'll hear me refer to it as GWAT many times. Sorry, I do that inadvertently. Whenever I refer to GWAT, we're talking Iraq, Afghanistan, for the most part. That's what we're talking about. I have so many friends who have fought in those wars. And I'll be honest with you, my friends who have fought in those wars, many of them are not doing well today. And they're doing as bad or worse today than they were doing after we got back. And allow me to explain for those who may not quite understand. I'm not some warrior, right? That's not me. I know a lot, but it's not me. I was a four-year grunt Marine and an average one at that. I ain't some stud, right? That's it. I was in Iraq. I was there for the Iraq invasion. So we crossed the line all the way up to Baghdad and back. So that's what my unit did. 1st Battalion, 7th Marines, Alpha Company. Weapons platoon, baby. Anyway, when guys get back, they obviously struggle. You've seen enough movies. Maybe you know enough people now that it most definitely is a struggle once you get back from a combat situation and you have to adjust to civilian life, normal life. You're no longer in combat. Emotionally, you're a little hard, a little chafed. There's a laundry list of reasons, things you saw, things you did. That creates something that everyone would know today as PTSD. PTSD, you struggle with certain things. I've told you about, you know, me sitting alone in the dark. I've told you about that. I've told you about one of my buddies. I remember it like it was yesterday. We were leaving the gas station after we got back, and there were construction workers at the gas station. They were unloading some cones, some of the orange traffic cones, out the back of a truck. You know, they weren't doing anything wrong. They were just unloading cones. And one of them, as we were getting in the car, me and my buddy, he took one of the cones and threw it out the back of the truck. And it landed flush with the pavement, so it kind of did a bop, kind of did one of those type things. And my buddy did not do well. He dove into the car. Okay, so you know that. That's regular PTSD. And I'm definitely not dismissive of that. That's a real thing. It's cost a lot of guys their marriages, their jobs, their lives. You know, it's a real thing. So I'm certainly not setting that aside. But what I'm seeing a lot of today, a lot of, is guys who spent a long time, so many are still in, many are out by now, but they served honorably, they did the right thing, and now that we have the benefit of hindsight and the benefit of time, they look back on wherever they fought, whether it be Iraq or Afghanistan, and they feel like it was for nothing. They feel like they fought for nothing. And you know, I've never sugarcoated this for anybody. I've been very honest about how I feel about it. That's how I feel. That's how I feel about Iraq. I do. I'm not saying you have to agree with me if you were there, but that's how I feel. I look back on what we did, and I'm very proud of my service and proud of the service of my buddies. And we went over there and we did what we were told to do and we followed orders and whatnot. But look, let's be honest, that was a bunch of crap. That whole thing was a bunch of crap. What are we doing invading Iraq? Afghanistan. How we handled ourselves there was horrible. We weren't even fighting to win. We got these guys out there fighting and bleeding and dying. And we're not even trying to win. We got our guys guarding poppy fields over there, guarding the heroin fields. You'd get in trouble if you took your Humvee and you drove it through a poppy field and damaged their poppy. You'd probably get court-martialed over there. In fact, I won't go into it. But so guys, now, as all this military stuff, which I'm about to go into, as they're watching the after-action report, we'll call it the long-term after-action report. Okay, we're kind of done with Iraq. We're definitely done with Afghanistan. And now that we're taking it all in and we're learning about everything that happened there, we're learning more and more, and we're seeing the lack of accountability there, and we're seeing how it all ended, and we're seeing how the people who were in charge, the wonderful way, to be honest, they're treated. My guys, a lot of guys I know right now, are struggling with that. It is bringing, I don't know if I want to call it a new kind of PTSD, but I think I'll just put it to you that way so it makes more sense to you and to me. I am seeing a renewed PTSD, a new kind of PTSD. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Chris. Chris said a newfound hate. Yeah, I am seeing that in a lot of my friends. They are guys I don't even talk to regularly that I haven't talked to in 6 months or a year. They'll text me an article about this general or this, and it'll be something along the lines of, can you believe this crap? And it's generally not with words that are not that nice. And they're struggling. And so we start texting. I find out they're struggling. So when I say I'm going to be sensitive, maybe I won't be sensitive. That's not really something I'm probably capable of. Understand that when I'm talking about what I'm about to talk about, I understand that there are men and women out there that this is going to be hard to hear. A lot of this stuff is going to be hard to hear and hard to digest. And it is something I still deal with myself personally. I still deal with Iraq was about nothing. That's hard for me. I'm okay. Don't worry about me. Don't worry. You don't have to send me your emails or whatnot. I know how wonderful you are to me. You don't have to worry about me. I'm doing okay. But for me, even, it's hard to know that signed up, you joined the Marines, and then, America, patriotism, and fight for my country, and to know that that was wasted. And honestly, how many Vietnam guys are listening right now, and they're leaning back, scoffing, saying, yeah, tell me about it. They know. They've been through it. And it's hard to take. So let's just lead off with this. This was General Kenneth McKenzie from today. There was a hearing in the House where some of these generals had to sit there and answer some questions.
And August 14th, just days before the fall of Kabul and the evacuation of the embassy, August 14th is when they finally put forward this plan?
Now, that's when we got authority to execute the plan.
That's when you got authority. And you urged the White House and State Department to put pen to paper to develop a plan to get Americans and our Afghan allies out of Afghanistan, correct?
Yes, I did. In fact, I was concerned by the middle of July. I was concerned about the different pace of Department of Defense planning as compared to Department of State planning. And I took an opportunity then to make representations to the secretary about my concern over that, the fact that we were moving pretty fast on this. They were not moving fast, and I was concerned that we were going to arrive at different locations.
Let me do this a little differently. I want to make sure I explain what you're hearing here. I know a lot of it's kind of obvious, but essentially this general, the Defense Department, the military, they understand that leaving a place is difficult. It is difficult, especially when you've spent 20 years in Afghanistan. You have your own people there. You have interpreters who are kind of your people there, all kinds of equipment there, different factions, different this, different that. Leaving a place safely, getting everyone out of a place safely, it is a challenge, but it is something you can do, Remember, it is possible to leave a place safely. It's always hard to be the last one out who has to turn out the lights, but you do things in stages. You do things smartly. We will clear out this sector by this state and make sure they're safe, and then we're going to take care of this problem and make sure they're out. And you kind of slowly but surely, as you're backing into the room, you're closing the door on the way. That's how you get out of a place and get out of a place safely. And the military, as you just heard, they were ready and willing and realized that they needed a plan. So they came up with a plan, and they kept asking the White House, the State Department, hey, should we start? Should we start? Should we start? And that's what you're hearing here. And you're also hearing something that I've heard consistently. The problem with our egress. I got to stop using words like that. A problem with our get out of Afghanistan is the State Department took it over. The military didn't. The keys were handed to the State Department. I'm going to play that again, and we'll explain that, and we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. We'll talk about what Mark Milley said about our equipment left behind. Then I'll probably get to some calls and some budget stuff before we do any of that. Let's switch your cell phone real quickly. Pause on all that. And let's do something else. You see, we all have cell phones. Don't lie. Everyone does. Everyone has one now. I don't even have a landline. I do would have a landline. We all have cell phones. And the thing is, we pay our cell phone bill automatically every month. It's one of those things. Everyone does it. We sign up. We give them our credit card number or our bank account, and they automatically take the money out. But isn't it wild and kind of ugly to think that if you have AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, you make a monthly payment to communism every single month? You realize that? Every single month, you automatically pay people who hate your guts to destroy your country. It's kind of dark, right? But it's true. That's why we should switch, especially when switching is easy. I brought this up before, but PureTalk hires Americans who speak English. When you deal with Pure Talk on the phone, and I've had to, they're just wonderful. And they understand you when you talk. It takes 10 minutes on the phone to switch. Switch. Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. Switch to Pure Talk. We'll be back.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday, reminding you, you can email the show and should. We love your emails, whatever you want. Love, hate, death threats, ask Dr. Jesse questions. Email those into jesse@jessekellyshow.com. I'm still going to get to this spending deal and this poll about how the culture has shifted and remote work and other things. We're just going over some of this Afghanistan withdrawal today. And I just want to remind everyone, I'm about to play Mark Milley because he was asked about all the equipment we left behind. I'm sure you remember. How many M4s did you see? Rifles. How many machine guns? How many machine guns did you see left behind? Helicopters. Humvees. Comms. We left them our comms. We left all these things to the people we were supposedly fighting for 20 years. And when I heard Mark Milley talk today, I couldn't get out of my mind that article we'd gone over. I think it was last week, maybe it was yesterday, about how wonderful Mark Milley, how his post-Joint Chiefs job is. Jobs, I should say, are. Got all these lucrative jobs. I think one was with J.P. Morgan, and the other he's working for Princeton. He's just sitting back watching the checks roll in. And I'm reminded that the history of the U.S. military prior to Vietnam was general after general after admiral getting fired. Oftentimes, it wasn't even fair, to be honest with you. You'll read these old books, and some general will just get sacked, and you'll look and you'll think, wait a minute, that wasn't even his fault. There was bad intel. He had no chance. Nope, perform or go. But in this country now, none of these people are ever held to account. Mark Milley, as he gives his testimony here, is wealthy beyond belief. He will spend the rest of his life on private jets, eating fancy steak dinners, Red Lobster whenever he wants. Here he was.
It's about 80-some-odd billion dollars worth of military aid total. That's everything from food and building barracks and uniforms and boots to include equipment. over 20 years. Right. And then he cites, I think it's $7.2 billion of military equipment, U.S. manufactured military equipment, that is with the Afghan security forces. That's Afghan-owned equipment, not American equipment. Every piece of American equipment that the American military owned came out with us with Scott Miller, or he destroyed it on site. And that's a fact. So the idea that the American...
So this this attack on Biden for not taking the equipment back is total bunk.
That's the level of accountability we have. This goes back to what I was talking about why the GWAT friends of mine are struggling so much. This is not a small deal when these guys who've given it all over there and they've watched friends give it all. How many guys are listening to me right now and they're missing limbs because of all this? And they hear the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs say, well, I mean, look, we didn't leave them the stuff. We didn't really leave them the stuff per se. Yeah, they have the stuff. But see, that was just stuff we gave the Afghan security forces, and then the Afghan security forces, who we supposedly trained for 20 years, they just collapsed and handed all that stuff to the Taliban. So, I mean, yeah, the Taliban, they have all of our stuff, but we didn't give it to them, so we're all good to go. That's where we're at now in this country. That's what we get now out of our military leaders. That and stuff like this.
How many Americans are left behind? How many of our allies? And what has happened to them? Have they been beaten, killed, tortured?
Number of Americans. This was always an issue. The number of Americans, that was always a difficult number for us in the Department of Defense to get a hold of. And I think it's true at the tactical level and operational level as well. And I'll be candid. I don't know the exact number of Americans that were left behind because the starting number was never clear. Same is true of at-risk Afghans, SIVs, the commandos, other Afghans that serve with us.
This goes back to what we were talking about how the State Department took this over. The State Department decided, remember, this was all done for political reasons. Remember when this was? This was done right before 9/11, right before the 20th anniversary of 9/11. This was done so the Biden administration could have a big victory lap and a bunch of parades that they had victory. Now, they didn't end up doing those because the withdrawal ended up being so disastrous. But that is why the State Department stepped in and told the military, hey, sorry, I know you guys had a plan, but we got to go. Actually, look at my watch. We got to go right now. We got to hurry up right now. There are other considerations. Other considerations. That's how we'll put that. Anyway, we got to wrap this up. Pack it up. Oh, you have a jail full of ISIS guys. Anyway, just hand them the keys. Who cares? And one of those ISIS guys, I just want to remind everyone as I finish this here, one of those ISIS guys who we had him in custody, we had him locked up, and he got let out. He's the ISIS guy who blew up 13 of our warriors outside of the airport. And we have Mark Milley and general after general. They're not sorry. They express no regret. Our politicians express no regret. Joe Biden to this day, well, I don't know how else we could have done it. Ha, ha, ha. That's why our guys are struggling. All right. You know what? We'll take some calls, do some budget stuff. 877-377-4373. 877-377-4373. Just get right to the point. That's all that matters. Also, taking care of the families left behind from the global war on terror, that's not something that has stopped now that the wars are over. Because dad still isn't there. And mom still isn't there. And Tunnel to Towers is still caring for these people. And they're still caring for these catastrophically injured veterans who came back without legs and arms and eyes. They're building them smart homes. And Tunnel to Towers is still there for our fallen first responder families. When firefighter dad goes to work and gets gunned down by a gangbanger in his neighborhood, who's there for mom and the kids? Tunnel to Towers is. They come alongside these families and they care for widows and orphans. And 95 cents of every dollar goes to its programs. That's unheard of for an organization like this. So proud to work with them. $11 a month is what they ask for. T2T.org. T2T.org. We'll be back.
Jesse Kelly. Back soon.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. We have to talk about this spending thing here, which we're going to do here in a moment. And yes, I will get to your calls tonight. 877-377-4373. 877-377-4373. All right, let's do this. I'm unsure of exactly how I feel like approaching this tonight. And this is the reason why. We've already done this. We have to do this every time. And eventually, don't you feel like you're talking to the wall? I feel like I'm talking to the wall. We don't have any money left. The United States of America is beyond broke. Beyond dead broke. We're well past dead broke. There is no money left. And our debts have piled up to the point it's hard to imagine ever paying them back. Now, here's the reason it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't seem like that. We've used this example before. We don't feel like a poor country because here's what we are. We're the professional athlete. We're the young professional athlete, and we're making $10 million a year. Huge money, right? Gigantic. We're rich, although they probably make a lot more than that. Whatever. $10 million a year we're making. Now, because we're idiots, we spend $20 million a year. It's new houses and new mansions and new Lamborghinis and new diamonds and new this and this and that. We find a way to spend $20 million a year, but we still bring in $10 million a year. Now, we are dead broke. We have loans piled up all over the place, and it's really, really bad. But it doesn't really feel like we're dead broke. Why? Well, we still live in a mansion. My Lamborghini's still running this morning. I still have my $10,000 diamond necklace that I bought. So how could I be broke? But it doesn't feel like we're dead broke. Because we're still making $10 million a year. Therefore, we're still bringing in enough to barely keep our heads above water for now. Obviously, that day is going to end. That time is going to end. And soon our heads won't be able to stay above water. But because we're bringing in so much money, we can barely make enough bills here and barely make enough bills there. And we make this payment here. And so we're just barely getting by. So we're still in the mansion. We're still in the Lambo. So everything's fine, right? Everything's not fine. We are $34 trillion in debt. And now adding a new trillion every 3 months, the fiscal crisis is coming. And in case you thought maybe that was just something I was doing, you should understand that now sitting members of Congress are essentially saying that. I'm going to paraphrase here because I don't have it right in front of me. But Thomas Massie this morning, he basically came out online. And here it is. I have it word for word. This is his quote. This is a sitting member of Congress. Quote, "I have come to the conclusion that an economic catastrophe must happen before a majority of my colleagues will get serious about curbing out-of-control government spending. I don't know when these things will occur, but that will be the order of operations." You didn't think I was just doing this for radio, right? The crisis is coming. And yet, Democrats and Republicans just met and have come to an agreement on a bunch of new bills. Now, you're going to find this confusing because they make it confusing. It's supposedly one big bill, but no, it's six different bills. But no, you talked to a different guy. I talked to a congressman this morning. He said, no, it was one big omnibus bill, but they split it into two omnibus bills. It doesn't matter. It's a lot of money. And let me clue you in on something. It not only doesn't cut a dime, it increases the spending. It increases it. And the reason I'm not sure if I even want to go into this now is why? You know, I know. Every few months when they do one of these big things, we scream and we beat our heads against the wall, but it's already been decided. Here's Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. This was, what was this? I guess it was this morning. Quote, "An agreement has been reached for DHS appropriations, which will allow completion of the FY fiscal year 24 appropriations process." This is my favorite part of this. Listen to this. This is my favorite part. House and Senate committees have begun drafting bill text to be prepared for release and consideration by the full House and Senate as soon as possible. Wait a minute. You just said in the previous sentence that an agreement has been reached. And in fact, I have an article here. Yeah, Chuck Schumer and Mike Johnson got together. They've reached an agreement. Joe Biden has already said, he said it actually today, that he'll sign it. So everyone's reached an agreement. An agreement on what? Oh, I don't know. We're going to start writing it any second, guys. I'm glad we're all in agreement here. Hang on. Let me sit down and write some stuff up. Just naked corruption. Just naked corruption. Kamala Harris corruption. That's what we'll call it. Just brazen. No clothes. Out in the open. We've come to an agreement. We're going to save the country. Great bill we've got. Hey, what's in it? Oh, I don't know. We're going to start writing that here any minute now. Any minute, you guys. Why bother? We get this.
My Republican friends tell me we're spending a lot of money. It's saving billions of dollars. Saving billions of dollars. We're actually cutting the deficit, too.
Yeah, I'm not even going to bother. If you want to rant about it, fine. I'm going to move on to other things. It's very clear they're not listening to us. And it's very clear, let's be honest, there aren't enough of us. People don't vote based on this stuff. And that's why we get these losers in charge. We have exactly what we voted for. Whatever. I hear from you. Neil, Texas. Go, boss.
Hey, Jesse. Love the show. But you know that. And I just want to offer some solace to those of us that were out there in Iraq. And let's think about the good that we did do for people. We were following orders. Yes, I get that. But think about all the crippled people and the guys missing limbs that Saddam had cut up. So we did do some good, and I hope that helps.
I hope it does, too. And thank you for that, Neil. I don't thank people for phone calls. Thank you for that. I think there are guys out there that need to hear that. And, yeah, I remember, I forget what city we were in. You never know where you are when you're actually there in combat. You always find out after. But I forget what city we were in, and Saddam had been toppled, and we were still, working our way through, just doing some things. And I remember this family. The families in Iraq were forced to have pictures or posters of Saddam Hussein up in their house. And I remember this woman with her children standing on a balcony looking over us, looking down, and she's holding up this picture of Saddam and she's tearing it up in front of us. She's so happy and whatnot. And yeah, it was a good moment. It was one of those moments. Shoot, I'm 42. It was, March 19th, 2003 was the invasion. So 21 years ago today. So this is 21 years ago, give or take. 21 years ago, and I still remember it like it was yesterday. I remember the look on her face. And yeah, look, in Afghanistan, you did little things that made people's lives better. I want to make sure I stress that every guy was over there. You did good. You did the honorable thing. You should be proud of what you did. You should always be proud of it, not ashamed of it. Just because evil scumbags in charge tainted what we did, that don't change what we did. All right? All right. 877-377-4373. Brody, Atlanta, go.
Pepe, I was there in 05, and about 8 months into our deployment, they took all of the snipers down. Those guys were bagging roadside bombers every night. If you had a shovel and a 155 round in your hand, you were on the ground, and the QRF went and got you. And they took those guys down. And the incidence of roadside bombs went up exponentially. Love the show, bro. Let the bar eat.
Appreciate you, brother. For those who might be a little fuzzy on some of the nomenclature there, obviously you know what a sniper is. I'm not going to insult your intelligence. But we had our snipers in place, and what they were supposed to do is take out the guys who were creating the IEDs, the improvised explosive devices. And when he said 155, what that is, it's an artillery shell. A lot of the IEDs were made, or some of them, I should say, were made from artillery shells. They'd bury them in the ground, You'd shovel them. That's what he was talking about, the shovel. The shovel in the 155, you shovel it out, you bury it in the ground, you hook it up to some sort of a radio device, maybe cell phone activated, you wait till the troops come through, pop, pop, you blow them all up. Well, we smartly deployed our snipers, so if you even look like you were interested in doing that, boom, there's one in your face, no IEDs, our guys get to live. So we can look better for some to somebody, I don't know. We took away those snipers, and men died. I don't want to say I hate these people, because I don't dwell on it. I don't let that bitterness fill me up. But I'll tell you what, man, that's not something I'm going to forget anytime soon. Anyway, 877-377-4373. Let's talk about something. Let's talk. Hey, you know what? You know what I could have used over there? Some Giza Dream Sheets. Chris, do you know that we had these, when I was there, there weren't any bases or anything like that. It was in the very early time. So it was just the ground for the most part. And then eventually, I remember we got cots. And it's just those crappy green cots. You can picture, you know what a cot looks like. We got these cots. Imagine how much better we would have slept with some Giza Dream Sheets back then. And maybe a MyPillow 2.0. Oh, maybe some My Slippers, and we could have got them super cheap back then, because we would have waited for a sale like now, where the My Slippers are 60% off. Giza Dream Sheets, queen size sets, $59.98 right now. You know what MyPillow does. You know about the pillows, the mattresses, the mattress toppers, the pajamas. You know about the fact they actually love this country. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special square, and use the promo code Jesse. All right. MyPillow.com, radio listener special square, promo code Jesse, or call them 800-845-0544. Don't miss out on some deals, man. The Giza Dream Sheets, they really are the best. MyPillow.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Missed out?
Catch up.
JesseKellyShow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. Don't worry, we still have more than an hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a Tuesday. I still say, yes, that's a great song. What's it called? A Horse with No Name, Chris? That's the name of the song? But they were absolutely on drugs. Every time I listen to the song, I convince myself that I'll figure out what they're talking about in the lyrics now. No. And you know why? I'm not on drugs. I have no idea what they're saying. Maybe I'll start doing a acid. Chris, do people still do acid? Well, how would you know? Never mind. I'm not going to do any acid. That doesn't sound good at all. I always thought that. You know what? Let's move on. Let's talk about something else. let's talk to the people, Chris. Jerry, New York, go.
Yes. How are you, Jesse? Appreciate you taking my call. I spent 34 years in law enforcement. On the local and federal level, but I concur with you. It's a war on law enforcement now. Law enforcement has been neutralized, and on the federal level, it's been weaponized. I love the job. I love the people I served with, my colleagues, but I feel exactly the way you feel regarding the military and basically how it has been a coup from above, and we're led by petty banana republic politicians. The only redeeming feature I have that I can say is that I was able to serve with good people, and my brothers in arms, be they military or law enforcement, those are the people that came out and you know, That was something that was good, because we were able to support each other.
You know, that's actually a really, really great point, Jerry. Something that I think that I want you to hear the point Jerry just made, and he's obviously spent a lot more time doing those kinds of things than I have. The time we got with special people is also worth something, you know. Just because our leadership sucks, right, at every level. And look, Jerry's a cop, too. Think about, he said federal and local. Think if Jerry was FBI, and I don't know, I'm not going to ask him. Think about the changes he's seen and how horrific that would be. But we did get to serve with great people. I'm actually texting during the break with my mortar section. My old mortar section, we're texting about a get-together we're going to have probably this July. We're probably going to take a weekend this July. Just guys who were over there together, spent so much time together. And we're going to get together at some cabin somewhere. No fancy plans. It's not going to be, you know, nice or fancy. We're going to get a boat, and we're going to go fishing. We're going to grill out burgers. And, man, that's worth something, too. Getting to know wonderful people, amazing people, brave men is worth something, too. Many people never get that. I'm blessed enough to have experienced that in my life. Jerry is. If you served, you are, too. Keep that in mind. Dave, Spokane, go.
Yeah, last week you were talking about A&Ws, and yes. I wanted to agree with you. I grew up in Spokane in the 60s and 70s, and the A&Ws had car hops, and they would serve frosty glass mugs of root beer to your window, along with burgers, Mama Burgers, Papa Burgers, anything you wanted. But also on Tuesdays, it was Cody Tuesdays for 25 cents each.
I was going to ask you, Dave, how much did they cost? Because I love talking to my old man about those stories. Oh, the frosty mug. I forgot A&W root beer when I brought it up. I forgot that they serve it when you're in the restaurant, that they serve it in the frosty mug. I can't believe that. And it adds something to it. A frosted mug, baby. Gosh, that sounds good. What, Chris? I don't know why they don't do that anymore, where the dimes get on the roller skates and they skate up to the side of the car and they deliver you frosty root beer and burgers. You probably can't get away with that these days. Everybody's a feminist now. And that's why all the stewardesses are dudes or ugly. That's exactly why, because everyone's too sensitive to that kind of stuff now. We need dimes serving cheeseburgers and A&W root beer, and your dog needs Rough Greens. Listen, your dog really does need nutrition. We're going to get back to these calls in a second. 877-377-4373. We're talking about your dog. I may love A&W root beer and A&W cheeseburgers, but I can't eat them every meal because that's empty calories. I would get fat and I would die at the age of 50. Your dog dies too early because we essentially give him that every meal. That's what dog food is. It's brown because it's dead, and we need to start pouring Rough Greens on our dog's food. All natural. It's created by a naturopathic doctor. Dr. Dennis Black is his name. He's a Green Beret, by the way. He created this for dogs because he loves them so much. Keep your dog longer. Keep your dog healthier. Start pouring Rough Greens on your dog's food. 833-33-MY-DOG. All right? Or go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. Get your dog some Rough Greens. Kathy, Washington, go.
Hey, thank you, Jesse. Love your show and all your honesty that you give to us. This weekend, I found myself watching a bunch of movies about the American Revolution and documentaries. And I realized that the revolution happened because we were being taxed to death and nobody was listening to the requests of the colonists. And we're there. I mean, it's like we're there. And a while back, you mentioned that the only solution that you saw was a divorce between the Democrats and the Republicans, and we take different states. And with basically, if we're adding $1 trillion every 3 months to our deficit, that gives us 4 years until we're at $50 trillion. And I've heard that a nation.
Yeah, no, it's really bad. It's extremely bad. Okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about, you know, are we there? Is it time for a revolution? Let's have an honest discussion about that, all right? And then I'll get back to more of these 877-377-4373. Hang on.
This is an iHeart podcast.